Hey there, podcast listener. This is Meg Malone, VPR's digital producer, and I am just letting you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, keeping it to the point. So let's get started.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Under a new law enacted this year, all schools and childcare centers in Vermont are going to have to test every single faucet, drinking fountain, ice machine, basically anywhere water comes out of the pipes in a way that a person might use that water to drink or cook with. They're testing for lead. And any water outlets that test positive for lead levels above 4 parts per billion need to be dealt with. Either the fixture or the pipes or whatever is causing the elevated lead levels need to be replaced, or the faucet has to be closed up. And in the meantime, school and childcare facilities need to offer an alternative source for staff and kids to get their water. This all came about because a few years ago, several state agencies and departments wondered how much lead was actually in the facilities where Vermont's young children are spending their time. There's no amount of lead that's safe for the human body, and young children are particularly susceptible to the developmental problems that can occur from lead poisoning. So 16 schools signed up to be part of a pilot program a few years ago. And lead was present in every single one of those schools. Now, most schools didn't have high enough levels to trigger immediate action. For the pilot, the acceptable level was set at the EPA standard of 15 parts per billion. But the fact that lead was so prevalent made a wider testing project more of a necessity. So now we have this new law. Every school and center has to test by December of 2020. We have more than 400 schools in the state and more than 1,200 child care centers, which means thousands of water faucets and drinking fountains. About half of the child care centers have already tested their facilities, and they're doing pretty well with low or no lead levels. But almost all of the schools are showing lead in at least one faucet that needs to be dealt with. Today, we're going to learn about why lead is present in our schools, how the schools are testing, what schools are doing once they find lead, and how much money has been put forward to help schools and childcare centers fix their problems. Joining me first today are two people who were part of the pilot program and have had to deal with this. Robin Boudreau is the facilities manager, and Joan Cavallo is the principal at the St. Albans City School. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
So, Robin, can you talk first about why you wanted St. Albans City School to get involved in this pilot project a couple of years ago to actually test your school for lead?
Well, to take away one of the big reasons was to take away the mystery as to what we actually had. And knowing that construction practices in our school was built in 1968 may have changed considerably, obviously, and to be much more accountable for the water quality. We do get the city water quality, but then again, once it passes through our pipes and gets dispensed to the children, we needed to know that in much more detail.
Did you expect to find lead?
You know, I got to say that in the period of time, it certainly made use of lead in the assembly of pipe systems. We in one way, we did, but over time, those same lead joints tend to get passivated or smoothed out and minimized. And we found much more in the fixtures of today. That with the other side of it is that I think in 1968, more and more fixtures were built in the United States. Today, not so much the case. We're importing these fixtures now. So there's a little bit more of a potential issue. So
Joan Cavallo, as principal, you know, your responsibility obviously is to your students and your staff and to the families in town who trust their kids with you. But it's also pretty nerve-wracking to think about, sure, let's sign up for a pilot project that we don't have to do that tells everybody in town that we're testing for lead and we might find it. And, you know, many parents will have had their children tested for lead at the pediatrician's office when they're two. And that's scary to think about. You know, there's no cure and no lead level is acceptable in especially a child's body. So how did you feel about actually doing this pilot project?
Well, Robin had started a couple of years earlier, having changed out so many fixtures. So we thought we were in good shape. And this was an opportunity at no cost for us to test the entire school. So if you're already on it and you think you've got it, then you would want to test to see, are we really in as good a shape as we think we are?
And were you?
We had missed one, and they found the one we missed, and that was great.
And what level was the one that you missed?
Oh,
It was 4 parts per billion.
And 4 parts per billion, again, that's in this new state law, yeah. 4 parts or more is the level at which a school or a child care center needs to take action according to this state law. The health department's actual recommended level is 1 part per billion or less, but the EPA's is 15 parts per billion. So, Robin, when your school found one faucet, one outlet at 4 parts per billion, you weren't actually required to take any action. But my understanding is that for St. Albans City School, you basically took the health department's recommended level and said, we're going to take action on anything that's 1 part per billion or higher. Why did you want to do that?
Oh, well, certainly. It was an opportunity to improve upon that process because it wasn't a big cost factor. Certainly, I believe it cost us $168 to change it out, and it was certainly bearable at the time. And it gives us a peace of mind. And the more we can do for our children, the better the process becomes.
Joan, did parents have any questions for you when you said you were doing this?
No. We also, when we sent the letter out, we told parents all the things we had done to already remedy what we believe would be a situation. And so we said, all we want to do is find out if it's true or not. And then when the results came out, when we sent our results letter out, we also said, and oh, by the way, the one that is already fixed.
So you were basically saying, like, this is what they found, but don't worry, we've already fixed
it. It's all
done. And people didn't say, like, you know, uh-oh, this is scary, or, you know, I need my child tested again or something like that. Okay. So, David Grass, you know, you had these 16 schools that did this pilot project, and you know, all of them found lead in their faucets or in their outlets in one place or another. Only 5 of them had to actually take action and had that 15 parts per billion or higher. How important was it to have these 16 schools go first to show that there was lead in all of these schools, at least in a small amount, to say to the legislature and to the state, you know, to sort of spur them to action that we need to be doing this more for all of our schools?
Sure. Well, we needed to start somewhere. And so when we were trying to identify which schools should we test, we stepped back and decided that we'd want to make sure that we had a geographical cross-section from across the state. We wanted to make sure that whichever schools we were offering this free testing program to stood to benefit the most from it. And so we looked at the background rates of lead poisoning in the community, the rates of poverty in the community, and whether there was a pre-K program present, the size of the student body. We took all of those factors into consideration in order to identify the 16 schools that we tested.
And when you mentioned that there was a pre-K program, you know, you're checking to see if there was a pre-K program there and a kindergarten classroom. And that's because, generally speaking, high lead levels are particularly a problem for children under the age of 6 because their bodies are developing and they actually pick up lead at a higher rate than adult bodies. Is that true?
That's true. There are a number of factors which make young children more susceptible. One is they absorb lead more readily than adults do. The second is sort of behavioral differences. They're more likely to be on the ground, places where they can get lead dust on their fingers, and they're more likely to ingest it. And third, just because their brains are developing so quickly, the same level of lead can actually cause more damage to a child's developing brain.
How big of a problem is lead poisoning and lead contamination for children in Vermont?
Well, it's much better than it used to be. The rates of children that are considered lead poisoned have dropped dramatically over the last 10 to 15 years. However, we still have more than 400 children in Vermont who are tested each year and found to have blood lead levels that are above what the CDC considers to be elevated. And 400 is 400 too many.
Listeners, I want to invite you into this conversation if you have questions about lead testing. Again, this is going to be done at all of Vermont schools and child care centers, more than 400 schools and more than 1,200 child care centers. But it's just started. So this law went into effect in June, but it has to be done while children are in the building. So this wasn't something that was mostly being done in the summertime. So schools are starting to be tested now. More than 600 child care centers have already been tested. David Grass, we did get a note from Dave, who wrote in to say, the limits for lead assume that someone is drinking 1 liter per day every day. Have any children been drinking that much water at school fountains? Has any child at schools tested positive? Has any child at schools that tested positive been found to have lead poisoning? So why not stop the testing on sinks that are not for drinking water and put signs on them that say non-potable water? That would save millions of dollars that could go toward eliminating lead paint in houses, which is where most lead exposure comes from. And Mark says, what is the action level for lead that's written into the state law across the lake in New York or across the river in New Hampshire? How does Vermont compare? So some people wondering a little bit about why Vermont is doing this, why the requirement for all schools. Can we tackle Dave's question first? Dave is skeptical that this is necessary.
Sure. Well, I just would put forward that it's not an either-or question. There are lots of actions that the state takes in order to try to reduce children's exposure to lead dust, lead paint. We work with the owners and managers of rental buildings in order to make sure that they're trained in essential maintenance practices so that they're not doing anything that's going to create a lead hazard in their rental unit. We have a lead and asbestos regulatory program that works with contractors and builders to make sure that they are using appropriate methods to minimize lead hazards. And finally, we have a healthy homes program where when a lead-poisoned child is identified, they actually go into the home, do an environmental investigation in order to identify and develop a plan to remove any lead hazards that they find. So the state is doing a great deal to remove lead hazards, both those from lead paint chips as well as lead in drinking water.
But have any children at schools that have so far tested high for lead also been found to have lead poisoning? I mean, is there a direct correlation between what's being found so far at schools and what's actually being found in children's bodies?
Sure.
Or staff members' bodies, for that
sure.
matter.
Sure. Yeah, I think the way to look at it is more that it is the add-on effect of the lead that children might be exposed to in drinking water. Every little additional exposure to lead is going to potentially cause additional damage. And so if they're already being exposed to lead chips, you want to make sure that they're not exposed to lead anywhere else. No, there aren't there haven't been any environmental investigations of children with lead poisoning where it's been traced back to exposure in a school. But I really think that's irrelevant. What we're looking at is, at a population scale, how can we reduce all of Vermont's children's exposure to lead? And removing it from drinking water in both school and child cares is one way to do that.
John Cavallo, what do you think? I mean, do you agree with what David Grass is saying about, you know, this hasn't been found to be a problem that schools are causing for the children who are testing positive, but from your perspective as a school principal, still worth doing it?
Well, when Robin started years ago telling me we're going to change out all these bubblers and all these faucets, and it's sort of like it makes sense. So if it's another source for kids, and if there's a way that we can, and we did ours over years, and we traded out quite a few, but every year we just kept doing them from the ones that were used the most to the ones that were used the least. And so I think if you can make something better, you do make something better, especially if it isn't that big of a cost and you don't have to weigh the trading.
Was it not that big of a cost? I mean, you didn't have to pay for the pilot project because that was right. Part of the benefits of being in the pilot. But if you're exchanging your – and I can tell, you know, here we have our difference in semantics, don't we, the bubblers versus water faucets. If you're changing out all the bubblers every couple of years or changing out the older ones, I mean, that's a cost to the school and a cost to the taxpayers that you have to justify. Mm.
Yeah, it is, but they were also old, you know, so it changed everything. And it was, they're kind of gross. The kids put their mouths all over them. And so like we got safer ones that were, there was so many things that were better about it. It wasn't just the lead. It was so many other things that were really better. And then putting the filtered water systems throughout the school so that we're encouraging kids to drink water and there's really safe, cold, fresh water that you're drinking. And so it's sort of an all-around wellness thing. So it kind of went with what we were doing anyway. It wasn't a big deal.
Robin, why was this something that you were really advocating for among all of the other responsibilities that you have? You know, it sounds like you were sort of the impetus behind, like, we got to do this stuff, and lead was part of it for you. Why was that something you were focused on?
In every classroom, we measure the performance of the classroom in itself, everything from the light level to the temperature within the building to the carbon dioxide level in the rooms, actually. So this just went hand in hand. And as Joan mentioned, you know, we were able to deal with the health side of things. Suddenly children aren't using bubblers anymore, but they're using bottle fillers, which came away with a very positive impact. You know, children without being sick anymore, and then they're much more alert in the school. So,
yeah, kids today bring their own water bottles. That wasn't something that happened when I was a kid. I don't know, maybe not for you either.
Yeah.
So let's go to Brian, who's calling in from Montreal. Brian, hi, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, I'm a 70-year-old, and I've gone through schools that were 100 years old when I went to them. And I'm not trying to poo-poo the question. What my 40 years in construction engineering taught me is that you got to look a long way ahead whenever you build a building or renovate it. And I'm wondering if anybody considered that all of these fixes like filters or new bubblers and this and the yacht is a solution that only lasts as long as that fixture stays in. How about thinking, well, we want to make sure the water can be cleared up of anything that we may be worried about in the future. Did you think of some automated valve or flushing device that will or could be programmed to clear out the system at any interval you feel like the programming it to? That way, no matter what hazard or worry arises in future years, you can flush the system and make the whole system as pure as whatever your water source is right at the entrance to the building, instead of going one by one, problem by problem, because that's a recipe for ad hoc or forgotten, or say the provider of your filters goes out of business. What happens to all those filters? You can no longer replace them.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for the question. David Grass, let me put that to you, because you know the state is mandating all of this testing, and we'll talk a little bit more in a few minutes about the money that the state has put forward to help schools pay for any remediation and for the testing. But Brian is saying, you know, if you're making the fix at the fixture level, you know, is there actually a better, more cost-effective way in the long run to be doing that?
Right. The state's goal is to do this in the most cost-effective way. And so usually that's replacing the fixture because that's where the lead is. And removing the source of the lead is really the most cost-effective way to address the issue. The default solution is not putting a filter at the end of the faucet. Only in a very few cases would that be the recommendation, where a school is working with DEC to identify that that is sort of the remediation action of last resort. Filters need to be maintained. They need to be replaced. And so there's too much of an opportunity for human error there. If we can just remove the lead from the plumbing line or from the fixture, that's really the long-term solution.
So can you just tell us the updated numbers that you have so far for the state? You know, we have, I think, about 437 schools that are being tested, and just a couple more than 30 of them have done the testing so far under the new law. And 91% of them have tested positive for lead levels that need action taken, so that 4 parts per billion. Is that a surprise? I mean, we know that all 16 schools in the pilot program found lead in some degree or another, but it sounds high to think 90% of our schools are finding lead levels that are unacceptable to the state.
Sure. No, it's not a surprise. Based on what we saw in terms of the distribution of lead levels from the pilot program, we were expecting to find that somewhere between 80 to 90% of the schools would have lead, at least one fixture with a lead concentration above the action level.
And child care centers, again, about half of them have already done the testing, so more than 600 of the more than 1,200 that are required to do the testing. They're doing a lot better. Only about 13% of those have found elevated lead levels. Why are child care centers faring so much better for having no lead or very little lead in their systems?
Sure. So the child care centers that we tested this summer are those child care centers that are open year-round. The majority of them are residential child care providers. And in those situations, you usually have one or two water fixtures that are being used to provide water for the children or to prepare food. So in those cases, there's only one or two fixtures that are being sampled. In the case of a school, you have, you know, 100, 200 fixtures that are being sampled. And so if you're just rolling the dice in terms of whether a fixture potentially has lead in it, you're rolling the dice 100 times or 200 times. And so it's much more likely that you're going to come up at least one with one fixture that has lead.
How many schools are finding that it's just one or two fixtures versus a school where there's actually a significant problem throughout the building?
There have only been one or two schools where I would say there's any issue that you would consider systemic.
We're talking today about lead levels in schools and childcare centers. All of Vermont's schools and centers are required to test for lead by the end of next year. And if they find lead levels above 4 parts per billion, they have to take action to remediate this situation. So often that's just in one faucet, one outlet. We're going to talk a little bit more about what that remediation actually entails. In many schools, it is just swapping out the outlet, but sometimes it can be a little bit more involved and more expensive. And we're going to talk about ways the state is trying to help pay for remediation. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're looking at the problem of lead in the drinking water in Vermont schools and childcare centers. All of them are required to test their water outlets by the end of 2020 and take steps to fix any areas where elevated lead levels are found. It's a scary thought to many parents and to people who work in these buildings because lead is not safe at any level in the human body, and it can cause serious problems, especially for small children, that show up as developmental delays, slowed physical growth, and behavioral issues. But it is worth looking at how problematic the lead being found in Vermont schools actually is and what's being done about it. We're talking with David Grass, Environmental Health Program Manager at the Vermont Department of Health, and with St. Albans City School Principal Joan Cavallo and Facilities Manager Robin Boudreau. And let's bring another voice into the conversation. Ben Montross is here as well. Ben is the Compliance Manager with the State Public Drinking Water Program. Ben, it's nice to have you on the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we haven't really talked about this much. We've talked about the fact that schools and childcare centers that do find high lead levels have to take remedial action at the point where the water is coming out. But where is the lead actually coming from? Is it coming from the fixtures? Is our drinking water by and large safe, Ben?
Yeah, by and large it is coming from the fixtures. Lead is not a contaminant that comes from the well or from the source of water, the lake or the river or something like that. The lead in the drinking water is the chemical reaction of the water as it travels through plumbing equipment that contains various amounts of lead. So predominantly for schools, the water is lead-free coming to the school, and then as it travels through the potentially spider web of plumbing within the buildings, going through valves and fixtures and into the faucets is where you start to see the lead being introduced.
So David mentioned earlier that there's only been a couple of schools, maybe one or two, where there's been a systemic problem. And in most schools where there has been elevated lead levels found, it's one faucet or, you know, one thing that needs to be replaced. So does that suggest that most of the fixes are going to be relatively easy for schools that test positive for high lead levels?
That's what we're expecting, yes.
And how much does that cost, though?
Well, it can be anywhere, I think Robin said, $160-something to replace a faucet. If it's more widespread plumbing improvements, you know, it can be anywhere up to several thousand dollars, depending on how much they need to tear into a wall or paint and spackle and things like that, depending on how extensive the work needs to be. But so far, we've seen predominantly the tap replacement has been the remediation action that's chosen, and it's been successful in a handful of cases that have resampled now so far. And that's, you know, a few hundred dollars in order to replace that faucet.
Can you talk a little bit about what it would entail if a childcare center or a school found that a problem was like in the, you know, the service line that connects them to the water main underground?
Sure. Yeah. So for schools, we don't anticipate many schools are served by a lead service line, but there could be instances where, especially if it's a residential daycare, where there could be a lead service line. Lead service lines are not incredibly prevalent in Vermont, but they are out there. Some estimates we've seen are from 4,000 to 13,000 to replace the line, depending how long it is. And then that can be anywhere up to 20,000 if they need to take up the front porch off in order to do the work type thing. And if there's porches and trees and sidewalks, things like that. But it could be much less than that. That said, one of the remediation actions could be for short term while people are gathering funds, would be the application of installing the filter on the end unit so that the water coming through, if it does pick up lead along the way, would be filtered out. So you would kind of, on a at least temporary, if not slightly longer term, address the lead concentrations coming through.
David Grass, there is money set aside for this project, and I was reading the text of the bill this morning, and it looks like about $3 million almost has been set aside, and the majority of that money is set aside for schools and childcare centers that need to take action. So it's actually in the testing process itself. There's some money for that, and there's money for whatever action needs to be taken. Can you talk a little bit about the costs? You know, why that seems like a lot of money if most schools are finding it's only, you know, one water faucet that needs replacement. I'd love to know what the breakdown is and why it, you know, why it costs that much and why the state is funding it that way.
Sure. So the money that was set aside is to cover both the testing and remediation. So the testing would include both the, you know, purchasing the sample testing sample kits that are going to be sent to schools, paying the courier who is bringing those samples back after they've been collected, then paying the lab to do the analysis. And when problems are found, the remediation reimbursement funds in order to pay the child care or school for whatever costs they incur for the replacement of those fixtures.
So generally, it's not that expensive to do the fixes, as we've heard from the St. Albans City School. You know, even replacing the bubblers at the cost to themselves has not been super expensive. It's sort of in the operating expenses of a school anyway that you're going to have to replace equipment. But again, $3 million is a lot. Is it just that we have, you know, thousands of taps that are going to be tested, and so the testing itself is expensive, and then, you know, whatever taps and fixtures need replacement, that's a couple hundred dollars maybe every time that it all adds up? Or is some of that money, you think, really going to be for those really expensive fixes?
Well, I think when they came up with that figure, you know, at that point, no one had ever done that complete census of how many fixtures are there in all of Vermont schools and child cares. And so they were coming up with estimates based on the work that had been done in the pilot and other water testing work to try to estimate how much money do we need to set aside if we want to make sure that there are enough funds to cover this project.
How much has been spent so far?
That's not something that I know. There will be an interim report to the legislature, I believe, in December, and maybe at that point we'll have total figures.
And that money, though, is all set aside? It is not, like, promised but not yet actually in the place where it needs to be? Or, you know, I mean, is there any chance that that money won't materialize if schools should need it?
No, the money is set aside. It'll be there.
Joan Cavallo, how important do you think it is, not for St. Albans City, because you were involved in this pilot program, so your testing was paid for. You didn't have to pay to do the remedial action. But how important is it that there are funds for all of the schools that have to do this if this is a state requirement? I mean, in some ways, it seems like shouldn't schools be doing this anyway? So it should be in the operating costs. And maybe that is something that taxpayers feel like, yeah, we can shoulder that because it's, you know, the health and safety of the people who work in the schools and our children. On the other hand, you know, this is a newish mandate from the state. So, you know, maybe the state should be putting forward some money. How do you see it as a principle?
Well, it isn't something you plan for or even think about. Like, this is the first time and it sort of like came out and got out there. And all of a sudden, it was this big thing to do. The testing being part of the pilot, it was really kind of nice because they basically held our hands through the whole thing. They came and they brought us all the kits, and then Robin had to just take a day and run around and do all the faucets in the building. And then they came and picked it up and they took it to the lab. So when that's all your responsibility, it's a really big difference from when you were one of the pilots who got kind of your hand held through this whole process. So I don't think schools are prepared for every new thing that comes out. So I think when we know better and we want to do better, then sometimes we have to say, okay, well, we have to help the schools because it's not their fault. No one really thought about this before. And now that we are thinking about it and we want to do it as a system throughout the state, then I think you do need to be supportive of the schools because this isn't on everybody's radar. And not every school has a facility manager. I happen to have a really big school in the state of Vermont, so we have a little more support than there might be in a smaller school.
Robin, can you describe what you actually had to do to test all of the faucets?
Actually, you like David said, we did have to take samples at every tap or inventory. First, we had to inventory the taps and then follow them up with a sample of each one. And we, at our school, we had 188 taps. So, and that means that you gather samples in two states. One is a flush and one is a first draw sample. And that makes a determination. It gives you a little bit of details as to your performance in the system. That didn't take long, but certainly you look back at the logic behind doing this, and it certainly presented you with a lot of solutions on your test results. So the good news is Mr. Montrose was able to assist us through this process as well, and we were able to correct things without grand fanfare or anything like that. So,
And according to the law, you're going to have to keep testing to make sure that you're still in compliance. Do you think that's going to be a problem, or is that just something that then you work into, you know, into your schedule?
And every new fixture that I put in, I will certainly test it. I'm already in that process with one fixture. So it is part of our daily routine now, maintenance-wise in the facility. So,
Ben, how difficult do you think it is for schools to be keeping up with that maintenance? First of all, test every tap. I mean, 188 taps, hopefully you know where they all are in your school, but some might be a surprise to a few places. But then, you know, the state, your compliance manager, how do you even make sure that all of these schools are testing every single tap? They had to do the inventory, but, you know, you're not going in and checking every single school's every single outlet. So how do you make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to, testing every tap, and, you know, actually coming up with the results that the state is going to require?
So I think the health department is really managing that. They're really relying on the tap inventories. They're individually reviewed by their team, and, you know, we're relying on the inventory and the quality that it takes to produce them. So we're relying on information from the schools to know their schools, to know their buildings, to, if not, to go find out and learn about their buildings and then put it down on that inventory. And that's what's really driving the number of samples required.
David Grass, I know you wanted to talk specifically about childcare facilities because, you know, there obviously are some differences between childcare facilities, many of which are in-home, many of which are privately run versus the public school system and the other schools in the state. What are you looking specifically at childcare facilities when you think about this program?
Well, the childcare facilities generally don't have a facilities manager, and so this is on the childcare provider to educate themselves about how to take the samples, how to collect the information that we need so that when we're presenting the results to the public, it all makes sense. Trying to figure out when they have elevated levels, what the best way to perform that remediation is. They have to put the money down up front for that fixture replacement if that's what they're going to do, and that can be a big demand on a small business. So I just want to acknowledge that while the state may be helping to sort of organize the process, the actual work on the ground is being done by the facilities managers, the child care providers. In some cases, in smaller schools, you know, it may be the principal themselves or an administrative assistant who's actually doing the work. And so in terms of who's identifying where the problems are, it's really the school staff, the child care staff. And I just want to acknowledge that they're the ones who are doing that.
And, you know, as this moves forward, is it going to be a big burden for schools and childcare facilities to continue testing to make sure that they're in compliance? You know, this is not a one and done thing. This is something that's now ongoing for programs.
Right. There will be repeated testing. In terms of the frequency with which that'll happen, that will get worked out in a rules process, which will begin next year. There will be public input on that in order to determine, you know, should it be every 3 years, should it be every 5 years. And will it be an ongoing effort for the schools? Sure. This is not not something that the schools have necessarily incorporated into their everyday business as usual. But as you can see at St. Albans City, they've kind of taken the lessons from the pilot project and incorporated it into how they do business. And you know, hopefully that will be how things work moving forward.
Ben, can I just ask you too, for schools, you know, Robin was mentioning that he found, you know, he knew which tap was problematic and you can switch it out. But if you get an elevated lead test from one water fixture, one outlet, you don't necessarily know which part it is that's causing the lead. So how are facilities supposed to figure that out? And, you know, and then how often do they have to resample and when to make sure that they've actually fixed the problem?
So the initial round of sampling is actually two samples, as Robin said. It's the first draw, so that's water having sat in the pipes for 8 to 18 hours, and then after running the water for 30 seconds. So that first draw really captures the lead content and contribution from the fixture itself. Then you flush the water, and then you start to see what's coming into the building, what's coming through the piping, because that's further down the line, further upstream from where the water's coming. Normally, you know, most of the samples, if they're high, we're seeing it be high at the tap and then it drops because the likelihood of having a lot of lead exposure further up the pipe is less. So we're really just seeing those initial taps be high. The school needs to sample, do the initial sampling for those two, and then address the taps as necessary, flush them, and then resample both again
first draw and flush to make sure that the remediation effort worked. If it didn't, we'll put our heads together, we'll figure something out, and then sample again until we can document that it's safe.
Well, it's interesting to note for the, you know, more than 400 schools that still have to test and the approximately 600 childcare facilities that also still need to test all of their outlets for lead as part of the new state law requiring schools and childcare facilities to make sure that they don't have elevated lead levels in their systems. So thanks to all four of you for being part of this program today, helping us understand what's happening and what it's like on actually the school grounds to do this kind of work. Robin Boudreau is facilities manager at St. Albans City School. Joan Cavallo is the principal there. Thanks very much to both of you. David Grass is environmental health program manager at the Vermont Department of Health. And Ben Montross is compliance manager with the State Public Drinking Water Program. David, Ben, thanks very much to you as well.
Thank you.